The Mishnah in Beseches Nazir, Taf Chav Gimel, teaches that if a Isha made a neder and her husband annulled the neder unbeknownst to her or her father, and she went and violated her own neder without any knowledge of the fact that her neder was no longer valid, it was annulled. The halacha is that even though she technically did nothing wrong, but the Gemara, the Mishnah, learns out of a pasuk, the Hashem yislach lo, that she needs a kapara, because it's like she did an avera. She needs slicha v'kapara, slach lanu, machal lanu, kaper lanu. She has to go through a seder hatshuva because she intended on violating her neder, and even though it didn't turn out like that, but she didn't know that the neder was no longer valid. The question is, why should she need a tshuva? Why should she need a slicha? She did nothing wrong. Mitzad her maisa, her actions were entirely clean, pure. Another case the Gemara gives there, just to illustrate, someone's trying to eat chazer, and he picks up a piece of chazer, and he bites it, and he chews it, and he swallows it, and he takes another piece, he eats the whole piece of chazer, and then he finds out that actually he was eating fake bacon, and it wasn't even real, and it was kosher, and it OU. Oh man, he was looking to do an avera, and he was not matzliach. So, again, back to the question: why do you need a tshuva and a kapara in that case? Mitzad your maisa, you're totally clean. You did nothing wrong. Elamai, your intention was no good. But we have a rule that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not punish you for a bad intention. If someone has an intention to do an avera, and they're not matzliach, and the avera doesn't get done, so it doesn't count. So here, the action was kosher, because nothing happened, and the intention doesn't really matter. We don't follow intent. So why does she need a slicha and a kapara for what she did? So there's two ways to deal with this question. The first way that we're going to discuss is the Truma Sakri in the Hakdama. Although I'm not really sure who wrote the Hakdama of the Truma Sakri, because I see that they say it was put out posthumously from things that they put together. So did he write the Hakdama and then he was there? I don't really understand. Somebody wrote the Hakdama to the Truma Sakri. And in the Hakdama to the Truma Sakri, it says a beautiful idea as follows. He poses the question that we know Hashem is a very fair judge. Everyone knows Hashem judges fairly. And yet, we find unfair things. For example, if a person meant to do a mitzvah, and it was not matzliach, it's like he did a mitzvah. But if a person meant to do an avera, and it was not matzliach, so he's pater. There's no avera, there's no enish. So it's unfair. Hashem is leaning towards the good. Not only that, to compound the unfairness, if a guy tries or intends to do a mitzvah, he wants to do a mitzvah, and he's not matzliach, it doesn't work out, doesn't, you know, there's too much traffic, he has to turn back, he doesn't get any reward. But if a guy tries to do an avera, even if it doesn't work out, he gets the einish. So it's like, it's so not fair, what's going on? So the Truma Sakri explains this with a beautiful and very simple idea from a Mishnah in Kalim. The Mishnah in Kalim says that there's a difference between a tanner, a shopkeeper, someone who sells or deals with leather, and he sells leather, and a private citizen that happens to have a leather item. What's a leather item? It's an animal rawhide. So the Mishnah says like this: if you have an animal rawhide, it's not yet a finished product. But some people, they want it dafka as a rug. They like the rustic look. of an actual animal rawhide sitting as a rug, it really brings the house together, you know? So the halacha is like this. If a private person owns a rawhide and he has it at his house, and he decides one day that, or his wife decides that we like it as is and we want to display it, keep it as a nice rug. So it becomes a utensil, it becomes a keli. It leaves the field, it leaves the realm of rawhide, and it becomes a utensil. And now that it's a utensil, it's a keli, it's mekabel tuma. Even though it's unfinished, but your will, the fact that you want it, makes it a finished product, and it's mekabel tuma like a regular utensil. However, if you're a shopkeeper or you're a tanner, and you're looking to sell this, so in the meantime, haven't been many customers that day, so your mind is wandering, getting all sorts of funny ideas, and you decide you're going to remodel your place, and this rawhide will be a perfect for the new look that your store is going to have. If you had more customers, you'd be more busy. But if there's no customers, you're busy, you're going to redecorate the store. So you say, you know what, I'm going to keep the rawhide, and I'm going to make it my rustic welcome mat. So the Mishnah says that doesn't count. It's still a rawhide, it's still considered an oyer, it's not considered a keli. Why? So the Bartanur explains, because the minute a customer comes in, and he wants to buy your rustic doormat for a pair of shoes, you're going to sell it to him. And he's going to go and make a pair of shoes. So you're not really being kaveya. You're not really designating the rawhide as a keli. You just, in the meantime, it's a passing thought. It's a passing whim or a fancy, but you're not really serious about it. So you see from this Mishnah that there's two types of thoughts. There's a serious thought, and then there's a fleeting, passing thought. So he says the same thing with people. Really, when someone has a thought to do an avera, a proper serious thought to do an avera should get a punishment. And vice versa, a proper serious thought to do a mitzvah should receive reward. You don't have to do an action. So why doesn't Hashem normally give reward or punishment for thoughts? Because who says it's a serious thought? Maybe it's a passing thought. If you do it, oh, then it's serious. But until you do it, it could be it's a passing thought. So it says like this. A Jew that stood by Har Sinai and accepted the Torah upon himself, such a person, a Jew, a regular Jew, a kosher Jew, I should say, when he has a thought to do a mitzvah, that's a serious, legitimate thought. And therefore, even if the mitzvah doesn't pan out, we give him schar, because we know he was very serious about it. Whereas, if he has a thought to do an avera, he's a kosher Jew, all right, so he thought, maybe I'll steal the $10 out of that guy's pocket. It's lying there, no one notices, and he gets up, and then by the time he gets there, the guy wakes up, because the shear was over, and the guy gets up, and he walks out, and he says, all right, forget it, it's too late, I can't steal the money anymore. In that case, we say, you know what, he probably would have caught himself at the last second and said, well, what am I doing, I'm going to take money out of somebody's pocket. So it's not a serious thought. It's like the shop owner that wants to convert his merchandise into rustic welcome mats. It's not a serious thought. So that's why you don't get any punishment for it. But a goy is the opposite. A goy never stood by Har Sinai and fakert. When he decides to do a mitzvah, we say, you know, call me collect when it happens. So if it doesn't work out, we say it wasn't a serious thought in the first place. But a Jew, I mean, but an avera, if a guy intends on doing an avera, yeah, that's pretty serious. I bet he was going to do it. Oh, the store was closed, so he couldn't buy a gun and shoot somebody? Okay, I'm sorry, but I'm going to consider it like he did, because he was very serious about doing it. So that's how the Truma Zakri explains this unfairness, how really it is fair. So he says that Truma Zakri says the same thing is true about the woman who ate something that was forbidden to her, or at least she thought was forbidden. Really, any person that has an intent to eat a chazer or to break the nether should be over an avera. It's just like anything else. We have to see that it's a serious thought. But here, she thought that she is forbidden to eat this, and she ate it anyway. So you see, that she intended on carrying out her Avera was a very serious thought. Now, it happened to be, it was a lucky day, her husband had annulled the vow, but her thought was very serious. So therefore, she needs a kapara. Why? Because her thought was serious. And technically, any serious thought. Someone gave me a mashal. I was discussing this with somebody, he gave me a good mashal. So the guy goes to the elevator, and he pushes the button, or not just the elevator, any electronic device. And unbeknownst to him, the power was out. So, according to the Truma Sakri, he would have an Avera of Chil Shabbos on his hands, because he intended on being Mechal Shabbos, and the proof is that he actually, you know, put the key in the ignition. Alright, the car didn't start. But he wanted to do it. So whenever you have a serious thought, you chayev. That's how the Truma Sakri explains this sugya. But there's another pshat from the Briskerov. Not that it's so direct, because it's in the Sefer, Mipi HaShmua, but it's mentioned from the Briskerov, the following pshat. In the beginning we asked that L'chaira doesn't make sense why she needs kapara. Her actions don't count, because her actions were clean, because she didn't actually violate the neder, and her thought doesn't count. So the first answer that Truma Sakri gave was, here, her thought counts. Because a serious thought, either for a mitzvah or for an avera, does count. The Briskerov says differently. He says, no, the thought doesn't count. Thoughts don't count. You know what counts here? The maisa. Because she did a maisa avera. She went and picked up an iser and ate it. Even though she made a neder, she's not going to eat it. That's called a maisa avera. It's true that there was no cheftza of that avera. There was no actual avera. But she went through the motions of that avera, and to her mind, she was doing that avera. Since she was doing that avera, she went through the motions, and she had her mind. That's considered what the Briskerov terms the Maisa avera. So it's a big chiddush. The Briskerov is saying that every avera can be divided into the cheftza of that avera and the Maisa of that avera. There's the actual avera, and then there's the going through the motions of that avera. And this is a big chiddush. It's almost hard to believe that Briskerov would say this, because how could you have an action of an avera? It's like if you go over to a shtender and you say Harei Hamikudesh Esli B'Tabazu, and you put the ring on the shtender, do you have an act of kedushin? I mean, what does this mean? So I was thinking, there's a famous idea from Rabbi Chanan that every mitzvah and every avera really has two parts. Number one, Hashem says, do not do this act. And when you do the act, you're rebelling against Hashem. That's number one. Number two, there's a reason why Hashem said don't do it. It's probably not so good for you. So every avera that a person does, he's really almost doing two things in one. Number one, he's rebelling against Hashem, who said not to. And number two, he's bringing on to himself whatever problem the avera was, which was why Hashem told him to stay away in the first place. And a mitzvah is the same thing. When a person does a mitzvah, number one, they're listening to Hashem. Even if what Hashem wants him to do would be pointless, still, the very fact that you're obeying Hashem is a very chashuv thing, a davar chashuv. And number two, there's a reason why Hashem wants you to take a lulav. Obviously, it's beneficial for you. So every mitzvah has two benefits, and every avera has two chesronos. The Briskerov didn't just make up this idea. He was coming off a Rambam. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says that if a woman makes a neder, and she says, I'm going to violate my neder, but she doesn't realize that her husband already annulled the neder, says the Rambam, she doesn't bring a carbon. She's potter from bringing a carbon, she's potter from getting malchus. Malchus, I think it says. She doesn't get malchus. Why? What does the Rambam say? Why doesn't she get malchus? Because the pasuk says, Vahashem yislach lo. Hashem forgives her. So the Briskerov says, you see from the Rambam, that if not for the pasuk of Hashem Yislach Lo, she would get Malkus. That means, when she went and took the, what in her mind was Aser and ate it, that's a Maisa Iser. and therefore she deserves Malkus. Ad k'day kach, that the Torah has to say, Gzeres HaKosev, there's no Malkus. So that's where the Brisker Rav is coming from. The Rambam is clear that you would deserve Malkus. So that's why the Brisker Rav says that you have a Maisa Isser, you have a Maisa Aveira right here, because you get Malkus. Happens to be, you don't get Malkus because the Pasuk says, V'Hashem Yislach Lo, it's a Petur. The Torah Pater Sur for Malkus. But that's where the Brisker Rav is coming from. You see, it's very serious. It's a real Maisa. Not just a Machshav, it's a real Maisa. That's where you would get Malkus. Okay? There's a cause if you don't get Malkus. So what does the Brisker Rav mean? It means like this. According to what we said, that there's two parts to every Avera. When a person does an Avera, let's say a person wears shatnez, or he does any Avera and he gets Malkus. Why is he getting Malkus? Which aspect of the Avera is causing him to get Malkus? Is it the fact that eating chadash is not good for his soul? Is it the fact that eating truma, if he's a Yisrael, is not good for him? Or is he getting Malkus because he disobeyed Hashem? So the Malkus comes because you're a Rasha. I saw it brought down that Rabbi Aaron Cutler said that the Malkus comes not for the Avera. The Malkus comes for the Rishus, for the Shem Rasha. V'hoyim bin ha-kois ha-rasha. The person's a Rasha, he gets Malkus. So it's not the Avera in terms of what it does to you. That's why you get Malkus. No. You get Malkus because you disobeyed Hashem. Even if Hashem would have said, stand against the wall for an hour, for no reason, Ches v'shalom, you still would get Malkus if you move away. Even though you haven't messed up your soul, let's just say. Although probably if Hashem would tell you to stand against... If you disobey Hashem, it could be that's also messing up your soul, but without getting so philosophical. That in and of itself, that you disobeyed Hashem, that's where the Chiv Malkus comes from. It's not because of the harmful effect that Avera has on you. So Eba Zoy, this could be the Peshat in the Brisker Rav. Zokti Brisker Rav, not that you have a Mais Avera. He means like this. The aspect of every Avera that gives you Malkus is the rebellion against Hashem. That's latent in the Avera. When a person does an Avera, it's a merida against Hashem. That's what he's doing. He's being merida against Hashem. When the woman thought that she had a nether, or the man thought that he was eating chazer, and he ate it anyway, so the rebellion against Hashem is there 100%. So therefore, it could be, machshava doesn't count, usually. And in the strict sense of the word, you didn't do the Avera, technically. Maybe even the Mais Avera you didn't do, technically, in the strict sense of the word. But the rebellion that every Avera carries, you definitely did. You rebelled against Hashem. That means you became a Rasha. You did an act that would define you as a Rasha. And therefore, you're eligible for Malkus, if not for the fact that the Torah comes along and says, V'Hashem Yislach Lo, you're potter from the Malkus. The Shvatim intended on selling Yosef, kidnapping him, killing him, selling him, whatever exactly they were doing to him, it was no fun.
Why doesn't the Svar apply by mitzvah? The opposite way?
Who said it doesn't apply by mitzvah?
That's
I didn't say anything about that. That was in my prep, but I didn't get to it. Where was I?
Shvatim.
So the Shvatim, they came against Yosef. And they wanted to be hara. They wanted to do evil to him. So they were miscavenged for an avera. Kidnapping, killing, selling, throwing. Epis they wanted to do no good. What ended up happening, they ended up helping him. Or at the very least, they didn't harm him. It's not bad. He became the Melech in Mitzrayim. I think most people would be willing to trade a few years in a jail, which he, by the way, he ran the jail, by the way. He was the warden, basically. A few years in a jail to be the king of the world, not the leader of the free world, just the world. So it ended up not being so bad what they did to him, but they were mechaven to do an avera to him.
They didn't ask him that he was a rogue. They didn't think that they were doing anything evil.
That's true. Right. They didn't think they were doing anything evil, but they were. Lamaisa.
It's not a merita.
You're saying they thought they didn't do anything bad. He's saying they didn't do anything bad.
So right. So it could be. So it's a machloikis amongst the mefarshim, and it could be you're touching on some of the nekudas. I don't want to get into it now, or at all, really. But it's a machloikis amongst the mefarshim. How do we look at the shvatim? Do we look at them like the woman that tried to eat pasul, tried to eat treif, or tried to break a neder, and really there was no neder to break? So, but she needs a kapara. Or no, do we look at them as completely blameless? It looks like this machlik is the Or Chaim holds one way and the Maral Diskin holds the other way. There's a Chasim Sefer talks about it. And the fact that they were machavim for a Dvar Mitzvah is a svara that's used in this issue. Mitzvah Shem, we shouldn't have these issues. We should only have intention to do mitzvahs and actually do them. Shabbos.